Hey there, folks. You're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM. This is Eat Your Arts and Vegetables, an arts talk radio show.
That's right. We're back after the holidays. The last 2 weeks, there have been recorded programming. And so December 5th and January 1st were both Thursdays. And so we opted not to do those live, oddly enough.
Imagine that.
Yeah. And so, but here we are today on storming into 2026 with all sorts of new stuff happening. There's an opening happening tomorrow night at Ace Art.
Mm-hmm.
There was an opening last night for Michael Boss at 226 Main Street, which I'm very pleased to announce we have Michael Boss in the studio today.
Yes, welcome.
Thank you.
There we go. Yeah. You're back on now. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah. So Michael is an artist that has been around the city for a very long time. He did his master's at the university in Thunder Bay, and I'm escaping the university's name.
Close. You got the province right.
Oh, was it Windsor?
It was in Windsor.
It was Windsor.
But
okay.
I taught at Thunder Bay.
That's what it was. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That
so did his MFA at Windsor University, and originally a Winnipegger or sort of Manitoban, and I had the pleasure of having Michael also as my boss at the Winnipeg Art Gallery Studio Programs. You were there for a number of years as well. I don't know, like I'm thinking...
14.
I was going to say 10, 15 years.
But well, it might have been 16, but I think it was, 16, actually.
Yeah. And you're also a practicing artist, yes. And I think also, my studio neighbor, too.
That's true, exactly, right beside.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's always in the same
building. And I'm also in that building.
Oh, no kidding.
Didn't know that. That's so crazy. Small world.
It is. Yeah. It is. It's such a great studio building. I love it there. I've been there for 30 some years now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an incredible spot.
Yeah. But the main reason why Michael's here today is to talk about this exhibition, Black Earth, installation by Michael Boss. The exhibition is up at 226 Main Street until January 16th. Do you happen to know the hours and days you're open, Michael?
Yes, it's Wednesday to Sunday, noon to 3.
There we go.
The two evening slots that I did have are now passed, so that's it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just to reference back to that evening event last night.
Mm-hmm.
It was probably the busiest opening I've ever seen at 226. It was packed.
That's what Diana was saying too. It was really, really rewarding to see all those folks who came out, and so many whom I know, and others that I'd not met before. So it was really kind of overwhelming. It was a really lovely evening. Got to talk to a lot of people, some I've never met before, and
yeah, like one really of good. one of the people that you'd never met before was a former, or is a former student of mine who's in first year of School of Art, BFA student.
Yes, yes.
And her parents are immigrants from Ukraine.
Yes.
And so she was very touched to meet you.
Well, it was nice to meet her and her mother, too. So, we could, I'm sure we could have lots of conversations about various things, because...
Yeah,
she hinted at some things that I thought, we really should talk about this.
So, keeping our listeners in suspense, can you maybe summarize a little bit for the exhibition? I don't want to do it for you. I'd rather you talk about your work.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's called Black Earth Chornozem, which is what the words Black Earth mean, or what Chornozem means, Black Earth, and.
Ukrainian, obviously.
In Ukrainian, right. Yeah. And I chose that as a title because all the work that I presented is focused on Ukraine and has elements that deal with the war. So I wanted to choose something that I thought was central even to the idea of war. So often it's a battle over land and the resources that the land offers. Mm-hmm. And Ukraine in particular is known for its very rich soil. That's really been an agrarian producer. It's called the breadbasket of Europe. And often the wars were fought over those kind of resources. And it's still the same. Now it's those resources plus the oil and nuclear energy that's being generated in Ukraine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it's there's so many ways to talk about this, and
And it's a heavy show. Like, you can really tell from the writing and like the installations that it means a lot to you on like a very personal level, while also speaking to like the broader histories of colonization in that land as well.
Yes. It is very personal to me. My father's side of the family, well, actually both sides of the family, came to Canada from Ukraine, but my father's side were Ukrainians, and that was their native tongue. And for the last 30 years or so, I've been exploring my ancestry, and including hiring a genealogist in Ukraine, and reading the history of that place in particular, and the two cultural histories, but predominantly the Ukrainian history.
When you say two cultural histories, which two cultures are you talking about?
My mother's side of the family were Mennonites.
Okay.
And it's an interesting combination to be composed of those two elements, Ukrainians and Mennonites,
because sometimes they were in opposition to each other too, as well, right?
Yes, exactly. I mean, on one hand, you have a group of people who are pacifists. That's their and very communal living too. Where that's the Mennonites, and the Ukrainians tended not to be pacifists, as any understanding of the Cossacks, for instance, they were not pacifists.
Right?
No, they loved the glory of battle.
Yes, and that's one of the reasons I portrayed them as bikers in this large painting that I have.
Yeah, in this really fascinating kind of like take on an Ilya Repin painting, or I don't know if I'm saying that last name right.
No, nobody seems to know.
I'm saying
I don't
it
either.
In a French way, but
I know it sounds sort of like a French name, but I just say Repin. But I'm not sure.
And just to interrupt briefly here, but that student that we were just talking about earlier, this was the work that she most gravitated towards. This is the work that she talked to me about.
Oh, that's interesting, because it's very well known, very well known. It's from, I mean, the original piece that I was basing this on is from 1891. Mm-hmm. And In fact, since the war began, there have been all sorts of versions of this that people have done. Actually, even before that, I came across a number of them while doing research, and I hadn't realized that how pivotal this piece was.
It's one of those historical paintings that, that artists will kind of satirically or critically revise.
Yes, yes, yeah. Used for their political purposes, and you know, sometimes in a mocking manner, sometimes to present a certain perspective on politics, you know.
Or sometimes it's an idealized manner too, perhaps sometimes too as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And just to let everybody know, the title of the painting that we're talking about is called Ukrainian Cossacks Send a Letter to Putin.
Yes.
And
they're sending more than letters now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would say it's like a historical pastiche of a group of people, and it's kind of got a historical reference in terms of like a crowd of people grouped together with poles and flags, and but then you've got a mix of like Harley Davidson mixed in with there with with 19th century people, and it's really a really great and interesting mix of ideas going on here. And I suspect there's all sorts of references, but I don't know what they are.
Yeah, do you want to see the original painting, Derek? I'm pulling it up.
But maybe while we're doing that, maybe you can talk about those references.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, there are contemporary references aside from the bikes. Originally, I did a smaller version of this as a pastel drawing in 2014. I was incensed when Russia invaded
Crimea,
yes, and started the war then, and it's never really let up because it's also in the Donetsk and Luhansk regions that they kept pushing in. So they'd taken over Crimea without any kind of pushback from the Western world, which don't get me started on that.
Yeah.
But they sent their little green men into the eastern provinces, particularly Luhansk and Donetsk. And they didn't even have the nerve to wear their army-issue uniforms. They hid all their patches so nobody would know who they were. And they've been there since then, since 2014. They stole a bunch of land there and have maintained most of it, now have expanded on it since the war became full scale.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, Russia's flooding the media with propaganda of, that they're most Crimea is culturally Russian and all of that, right?
Right.
What do you say to all that nonsense?
I don't think I can say it on the radio.
Oh, we can just say BS. Is that
BS is
a prime time phrase that we can use, maybe. Yeah.
I mean, the Crimean people were on the side of Ukraine.
Yeah,
but they were banished from Crimea, and the Russian population moved in. So
right.
And took over everything. So it's, it was horrible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and once again, with Crimea too, there's like that added resource of that particular piece of land is like the coast, right?
Yes,
being
absolutely.
On the peninsula and like the advantages that come with that kind of location.
Yeah, no, I mean that area is absolutely. Almost, it's like very Mediterranean, correct? It's like you've got vineyards and...
Yeah, I think it is. It's quite a warm climate. I've never been there, but beaches, and it's like it's a popular tourist destination.
Yeah.
And it's also like one of the main reasons I think that they occupied it was as a naval base.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great place to launch from. It's a great place to move troops into Ukraine, or it was until the Ukrainians' genius created drone warfare,
yes,
and blasted them. So,
Which is interesting. I feel like we're getting really off topic of the show here, but I feel like the drone warfare has really kept Ukraine in the game.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm not a military strategist by any stretch of
the
imagination, but my hope is, in fact, in the ingenuity of the Ukrainians, because they keep showing the Russian military as backwards and inept in so many ways.
I would say surprising the rest of the world. They were kind of counted out, and I think nobody expected them to last this long. And
no, they thought 3 days, would be it, and it would be taken over.
And so, when did they declare? When did Putin move in past Crimea? When was that? 4 years ago now? I can't even remember.
Yeah, February 2022 was when the full-scale invasion started, where they sent all these troops and tanks. Yeah. And I mean, that was their first mistake, and it's like, this was glorious. I mean, there's a highway full of military trucks.
Yeah.
I remember watching this on the news, and so the Ukrainians blew up something like every third truck, and they couldn't move.
Yeah.
Yep. Right?
It's like, you're sitting ducks, you fools.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought something that, like, is kind of, like, speaking to that, like, ingenuity and, like, people probably, like, shouldn't have been so surprised, because as you write in your brochure, like, up until Ukraine, like, got rid of their nuclear power supplies, like, they had, like, the third largest nuclear arsenal in the world.
Yes.
Until they gave it up. And you don't just, like, get that from not being, like, creative scientists and, like, having that ingenuity, right?
Yeah.
And also the idea of, like, you know, going through all these negotiations and talks and putting themselves on a limb and saying, we'll trust everybody, agree to these.
I know.
And this is what they get.
Yeah, I know. That one just sticks with me. I don't know how many times I've posted articles that I've written on Facebook and always refer back to that, the Budapest Memorandum, and how the United States, Great Britain, they were guarantors. Russia was a guarantor of it. You know? So, like, and I think Britain, United States, maybe France, I don't remember now.
Yeah. When was that?
1994.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Short memories, these nations. You know, at least France and Britain have been stepping up, and the United States was kind of stepping up before the moron got in.
Yeah. Before we know who.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But not enough, you know. I mean, you promise this nation that you're going to defend them if it comes to that. And then everybody's just twiddling their thumbs and saying, oh, I don't know if we can take on Russia.
Yeah.
You know, and Ukrainians are doing it. One third of the population.
Yeah.
They're doing it with help, of course, but they're the ones, they've said, you know, they have not called for boots on
the ground
from any other nations.
Yeah. I mean,
they said, we'll do this.
And there's been a major loss of that range of young men.
Yeah.
That's probably unprecedented since the Second World War.
It's atrocious. Any way you want to look at it, it's atrocious how the guarantors have not stepped up, kept their promises, and just how Russia and how Russia has just not been punished in any way that's suitable, because they keep going, you know, like just all these other nations who were supposed to be there and help out. And then, of course, they're not allowing Ukraine into NATO, you know, to satisfy Russia.
Which ironically was one of the things that sort of triggered the encroachment or this war of Putin. I mean, I think anything would have set him off, but he chose that as his excuse, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he's just a liar. He's a liar, and he's surrounded by liars. And
So we've been talking a lot about borders and geography, and I'm going back to, you know, your show, and if you're just tuning in, we're talking with Michael Voss, who currently has an exhibition up at 226 Main Street. The exhibition is called Black Earth, and we're talking about obviously Ukraine, but this is because it's all part of thematically and in terms of the visual language that's going on in Michael's work here. And I thought, since we're just talking specifically about geography, there's this painting in the show called Borderland, which really got my attention as well.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be able to talk about that painting?
Yeah.
Or kind of drawing combination painting?
Yeah. It is a combination. It's a map of Ukraine as the borders were before the encroachment in 2014. So it includes Crimea and the rest of present-day Ukraine. And at one point, this was done actually before the full-scale invasion.
So before 2022.
Yeah, I think I started in 2020 or 2021. And I was just really interested. I was reading a lot of the history and was really interested in all the changes, all of the border changes. I mean, Ukraina means border land. So that the name Ukraine equals borderland. That's what it means. I was just interested in all the history talks so much about all of these changes, all of these border changes. One empire takes it over, then another empire takes it over.
Right.
You know, north, south, east, west. There's always pushback from all of these other surrounding nations. And I think one of the reasons behind that was trade routes went from north to south and east to west through Ukraine.
Yeah.
So that's why there's a whole bunch of residual culture from all over the place that informs Ukrainian culture too. But so I gathered a bunch of maps. I went through all sorts of books I had, and I went online and I gathered scores of maps, and I wanted to try and plot it out to kind of get a handle on, you know, how these changes have happened. So it became apparent pretty quickly that I would not be able to map them all, because the whole map of Ukraine would be obliterated with all of the things that have gone there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, already, it's not a minimalist painting
to
begin with.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
It's a maximalist painting.
So I put three types of marks on the painting. One were red lines, and the red lines are all the border changes that I... Or let's say a number of the border changes, but enough to show you that it's changed all over the place from every angle throughout history. And the green marks on it are, the green arrows are troop movements. So just, again, throughout the history of warfare on that territory, this is an indication.
And just,
it's everywhere.
And just for our listeners, looking at the arrows in this map, it basically covers the entire map.
Yeah.
Like, you almost don't see the map. There are so many arrows going through it.
Yeah,
it's a very dense image.
Yeah.
Yes. And the last mark making are a series of red crosses. And these red crosses basically go all around Ukraine, the border, the current borders of Ukraine and a little bit beyond, and then up into Belarus as well. And that area that's covered by those marks represents what Professor Timothy Snyder refers to as the Bloodlands. And the Bloodlands, he wrote a whole book about the Bloodlands. Mm-hmm. The Bloodlands were, he designates them as between 1932 and 1945. So they include the time of the Holodomor, which was 1932 to 33, mass starvation, purposeful mass starvation by Stalin of Ukrainians, and World War II. So in that time frame, the estimate that Professor Snyder offered was 14 million civilians were murdered in that territory, on that territory, in those 12 years.
So we're not even talking about soldiers, we're just talking about civilians.
Just civilians,
yeah,
and
insane.
They were murdered. Not died of natural causes, not by accident.
Yeah.
These are ones that are murdered, and it's an incomplete record. There are archives in Russia that are difficult or impossible to access, especially now. And all, you know, oftentimes for records of any sort of large-scale things, you don't have a complete look at it. It's just you estimate. So 14 million, that's just civilians. That's just in those 12 years.
Yeah.
It's the largest mass murder in history.
Wow.
Yeah, it's insane.
So, yeah. You know, like that iconography of those, I guess, pluses to sort of reference the blood fields, is that what you call them?
Bloodlands. Yeah.
And of course, it seems like you've repeated that iconography in this other work as well, with the use of staples and the stars in the night sky.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I see them both as crosses.
Okay.
Even the red ones see on Bloodlands as crosses. Just
right.
I mean, distinguish it from the other lines, but also I see them like grave markers too.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah.
So would you mind talking about Stars in the Night Sky Monument?
Yeah.
To 31,000?
Yeah, so President Zelensky has been very circumspect, I guess we could say, in terms of releasing information about deaths during the war. And the first time I ever heard him mention a number was 2 years into the war, and he said at that point 31,000 soldiers had been killed during the war. And I took that and I tried to figure out, tried to comprehend that. So I was working on in my sketchbook and trying to figure out how can I represent that? How can I find a way of understanding this? And I settled on using a staple gun and stapling into 2x4 pillars. So it ended up being 15 pillars worth of staples all the way around.
It's a lot. This is a very powerful image in the brochure that we're looking at. And how tall are they in real life again?
They're 8 feet.
Yeah.
Eight feet tall.
Yeah. So it's quite interesting. At the opening last night, with there being so many people, and you could literally stand between them too, and you had to be very careful, of course, and a lot of people didn't, but it was so crowded that people kind of went, well, I'm going to just try to squeeze in here in the middle of Michael's installation, and hopefully that's okay. And they did. And
it was okay.
Yeah. But that work was very powerful and interesting. That, you know, you're a very representational drawer, or you have the skill of being a very good representational drawer, but you also occasionally will do work that's kind of using, can I say, a minimalist language. And I feel like this work is kind of doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a real conceptual vein in my work as well.
Which I really enjoy about your work, that you're able to kind of tap into both ways of working, I think.
Thank you.
Yeah, a nice push and pull across the show. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So we have to wrap things up, Michael, but any last final words before we go? Sorry to cut you off.
Yeah, no,
I feel like we're just kind of just beginning to scratch the surface here.
Yeah, no, that's good. It's gone by really quickly. I would just say Slava Ukraini, which is glory to Ukraine.
Amazing. Thank you so much for joining us today, Michael.
Thank you for inviting me.
And Michael, is there any like online information that we can offer our listeners in terms of work that you do, or
I have a Facebook page, and I show my work on there and write essays and post those.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
Okay. So Michael Boss, that's Michael and B-O-S-S on Facebook.
Yeah.
Other than that, check out the show that's currently up, Black Earth, by installation by Michael Boss. The exhibition is up until January 16, 2026. And what are the hours again, Michael?
It's Wednesday to Sunday, noon to 3.
Okay.
Amazing. Well, everyone, thanks for tuning in.
Yeah.
Stay tuned for Tawny the Brave, and we'll see you next Thursday.
Bye-bye.